Turn your radios up, it's Ralph Schumann and Maya Schumann if I take a name. So forget the rest, take a name is the best. They got it all from live shows to hidden reality on DVDs. So stay tuned and listen up. Matter of fact, turn your dials up, cause you're now listening to Take a Name with Ralph Schumann and Maya Schumann. Yeah.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schumann
and Maya Schumann. Our program today, the emerging mass opposition and imperial designs in Iran, the unfinished revolution. It was Iran's day of destiny and day of courage, wrote Robert Fisk in The Independent on Tuesday, June 16th. A million of its people marched from Englobe Square to Azadi Square, from the Square of Revolution to the Square of Freedom, beneath the eyes of Tehran's brutal riot police. Not since the 1979 Iranian Revolution have massed protesters gathered in such numbers or with such overwhelming popularity through the boulevards of this torrid, despairing city. They jostled and pushed and crowded through narrow lanes to reach the main highway, and then found riot police in steel helmets and batons lined on each side. The people ignored them all, and the cops, horribly outnumbered by these tens of thousands, smiled sheepishly and, to our astonishment, because Robert Fisk was among them, nodded their heads towards the men and women demanding freedom. Who would have believed the government had banned this march? Fisk continues, the protesters' bravery was all the more staggering because many had already learned of the savage killing of five Iranians on the campus of Tehran University, done to death, according to students, by pistol-firing Basiji militiamen. When I reached the gates of the college yesterday morning, many students were weeping behind the iron fence of the campus, shouting, "Massacre!" and throwing a black cloth across the mesh. That was when the riot police returned and charged into the university grounds once more. The students and the marchers sang in unison over and over the same word. Tanks, guns, Basiji, you have no effect now. As the government helicopters roared overhead, these thousands looked upward and bayed above the clatter of rotor blades. Where is my vote? Fisk is referring to the recent election, presidential elections in Iran. Out of 476 applicants, the unelected Guardian Council handpicked four candidates, all stalwart defenders of the Islamic regime. Among them, the current president, Ahmadinejad, and a former prime minister from 1981 to 1989, during the years of the Iran-Iraq War, someone who is a close associate of the Ayatollah Khomeini. This is Mir Hossein Mousavi. Shortly after the election, an election that Mousavi thought through his polling that he would win, the announcement made by the Guardian Council was that Ahmadinejad had won 63% over his three rivals. This is virtually identical to the outcome of the 2005 election. Immediately, Mir Hossein Mousavi, as well as the other candidates, announced this was not a valid election, and they filed over 600 complaints about the election. What is going on in Iran? The emerging mass opposition and imperial designs. Ralph?
Maya, we have to understand that Mir Hossein Mousavech was a prime minister of Iran during the entire period of the Iraq-Iran war. In fact, as the prime minister, he was a protege of Khomeini and was allied with Hashemi Rafsanjani. Now, Rafsanjani, who is today supporting him as an opponent of Ahmadinejad, Rafsanjani is perhaps one of the most powerful and corrupt and brutal and wealthy of the figures in the Khomeini entourage. I knew the man. I was in Iran for 7.5 months in 1978, working with Ali Asghar Hajzia Javadi in a group called Jambesh, which means struggle in Farsi. And in fact, was in Paris, flew to Paris from Tehran to meet with Khomeini and Rafsanjani and Bashefti and Vopsadeh and Yazdi, Ibrahim Yazdi, who is today backing Mousavi, flew back to Tehran with them, with Khomeini. But leaving that aside, the role of these people has been that of the gravediggers of the Iranian Revolution. That revolution was mobilized by the general strike of the oil workers, by the struggle, the armed struggle of the Fedayeen Khalq, indeed of the struggle of the Mujahideen Khalq, who had been allied in one organization previously with the Fedayeen Khalq. And the role of the mullahs and the role of Khomeini himself was to attempt to abort that revolutionary struggle. Their objective was to find, quote, patriotic officers who would stage a coup against the Shah and establish a Islamic patriotic military regime. They were out in the streets attempting to prevent the masses from mobilizing in the critical moments of that struggle. In fact, at the time when the Savak and the Shah's epigonies, not to mention the fact that the head of NATO, General Heuser, had for 6 months occupied the penthouse of the Hilton in Tehran, a strategic operation to orchestrate the preservation of the Shah's regime and the manipulation of the struggle in the streets in an attempt to establish, quote, an alternative scenario of military officers who were, quote, patriotic officers who would replace the Shah and abort the revolutionary struggle. The mullahs were tied into that. And that defines their role, because shortly after the removal of the Shah, when the Shah fled and the mobilization had reached its epic moment, shortly after that, the regime and those who stayed behind, through the officers, through the generals, attempted to get the army in the barracks to open fire en masse on the population. And in the east of Tehran, one of the barracks' rank-and-file soldiers refused, and a Savak officer shot dead several, at which point they killed him and handed weapons to the masses. And all of the army posts in Tehran and the large cities began to hand out weapons to the masses, and the struggle had taken not merely an armed flavor, but a mass insurrectional moment. That was not the agenda of Khomeini or the mullahs. And how were they to establish their control? The oil workers had a general strike that had paralyzed the regime. Khomeini had attempted to tell the oil workers to abandon the general strike. All of this is by way of situating the role of Ruhollah Khomeini, not only the role of the present leader Ali Khamenei, but in fact the position of Mousavi, Rafsanjani, Gopsadeh, Yazdi, all of the Islamic theocratic mullahs whose agenda was to establish a dictatorship over the mass of the population, to demobilize the oil workers, to, in fact, dismantle the trade unions, dismantle the workers' opposition, and, above all, to take aim at the left, at the intelligentsia, at all those who had been in struggle against the Shah for decades.
Ralph, Mir Hossein Mousavi has a master's degree in architecture and urban development from the National University. He was a founder of the Islamic Society of Students at the National University in Tehran, and he was part of the Islamic Republican Party Central Committee, its spokesperson, and he was the editor-in-chief of its newspaper. He then became a member of the Council of the Revolution and was appointed by Khomeini to be foreign minister in 1981, and then prime minister 1981 to 1989. As you mentioned, this was during the period of the Iran-Iraq War. He was the Grand Ayatollah Khomeini's representative to the Foundation of the Oppressed. and also his appointee to the Constitution Review Panel. He was definitely a member of the inner circle of the Islamic Republic.
There is a particular aspect, however, of Amir Hossein Mousawi that should be mentioned. Yes, he was part of something called the Freedom Movement of Iran that had been founded by Mehdi Bazargan. By the way, Bazargan had been Khomeini's hand-picked person to be the prime minister after the fleeing of the Shah and the arrival of Khomeini. I remember this well because there was a press conference in Tehran. The interpretation for Khomeini, who didn't speak English, was by Ibrahim Yazdi. Yazdi, by the way, is currently one of the supporters, along with Rafsanjani, of Mousavi and the opposition to Ahmadinejad. And Yazdi was translating for Khomeini, and Khomeini made a statement. He said, "Any who oppose Mehdi Bazargan, my selection as prime minister, are enemies of God, and their hand will be cut off." Yazdi, knowing that there were foreign press there, attempted to modify the words and said, of course, the imam is speaking metaphorically. Khomeini didn't speak English, but he got the drift of what Yazdi was about, and he said, moving his hand up and down, "I mean chopped off." There isn't much room for doubt about the character of the regime. We were soon calling the secret police of the mullahs the Savakh, with a K-H, and so was the brutality and the reopening of the Shah's torture chambers in the Evin prison, which now housed the intelligentsia and the student leaders and the cadre of the Fedayeen Khalq and the oil workers who were disappearing in their thousands. That's the legacy of this regime. And Mousavi, interestingly enough, like many of the youth amongst the Islamic militants of the day, was a regular attending student of a very prominent figure named Ali Shariati from Mashhad. Ali Shariati was a person who gave a socialist understanding of passages from the Quran. He linked the lessons of the Quran to the struggle of the oppressed, the struggle of the abandoned, and he constantly dwelled upon the passages and the character of the Quran as a revolutionary document of its day, and had a tremendous intellectual influence amongst the religious youth of the time. He was assassinated by the Savak in London. Ali Shariati had a profound influence on the young radicalizing Muslim youth, who then became supporters of the Mujahideen Khalq, which was linked with a Marxist organization and had Marxist principles as well, although religious, later to separate. But that is an instructive indicator of the origins of Mousavi's introduction to the religious opposition in Iran. He quickly assimilated to the apparatus. And the point, again, here is that his heavy hand, especially during the Iraq-Iran war, in the repression, in the mass incarceration of dissidents, in the shutting down of any opposition, was every bit as prominent and as ruthless as the mullahs, the ayatollahs, for whom he was an instrument.
Ralph, again, the fierce Tehran clashes, as described by Associated Press, these are the will of the people. To me, it isn't an issue of Mousavi and his election. It is the emerging anger, frustration of the people of Iran, of the young who cannot speak and cannot do unless they face imprisonment, of the newspapers, the editors who have been imprisoned for even criticizing in any small way,
oblique fashion,
the ruling Islamic Republic.
Well, this is the reality on the ground, and it's instructive to note that the Ahmadinejad regime has been targeted, as Iran itself has been targeted, as from the very beginning. Indeed, after all, it was the British, British colonialism, British imperialism, who selected a syphilitic corporal, the father of the Shah, who was their instrument for waging a bloody ethnic cleansing campaign on the behalf of the British Raj across Iran, which is a multicultural and multi-ethnic. Persia was multi-ethnic. The population that is Farsi or Persian in Iran is roughly 50% of the population. There are the Azerbaijani Turks, which is a huge number of Turkish-speaking Azeris, the Baluchi, the Kurds, the Arab minority of Khuzestan, which is in the south where the oil workers are, which is 6 to 8 million people. And the British used the Shah's father as basically a death squad operator who waged this war of subjugation of the various ethnic groupings that were living at the point in harmony with the Farsi majority. And that is the British legacy of pitting ethnic groups against each other and establishing a foothold amongst the Farsi population to impose domination on behalf of British imperialism. That's the legacy. And that discredited figure with the end of colonial hegemony in the region is what gave rise to the national movement of Mossadegh, as it did the Tudeh Party, the Communist Party of Iran. And as we know, Mossadegh nationalized oil in 1952 and led a national bourgeois revolution, which was met by the Central Intelligence Agency and the British with a putsch, which installed the Shah, and then the Savak was created by the Mossad of the Zionist state and the CIA, which was a reign of absolute brutal terror, detention camps, hundreds of thousands of people who disappeared in Iran, the torture chambers, I have seen them with my own eyes, all the safe houses in which people were tortured in Iran. To go into them was to go into a charnel house. It was like being in a slaughterhouse with pieces of flesh hanging from hooks, with the blood all over the floor, the head squeezing right out of the Inquisition. This was the apparatus of control of the Shah of Iran and of his masters in the United States. That is the legacy of imperialism. They have never forgiven the revolution against the Shah. They did everything they did to destroy it. However, they deployed the mullahs, because they attempt to manipulate every bourgeois formation to service the ends of preventing a revolution from reaching its culmination, from preventing the masses of the population from attacking the bourgeois and the capitalist instruments that imperialism relies upon to control populations. However, they have manipulated the mullahs. They did not and would not accept and have not accepted the revolutionary overthrow of their puppet in Iran. And that's a critical point for our understanding here, because Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's man, in the immediate aftermath of the revolution in Iran, organized a meeting in Kuwait with Saddam Hussein, with King Fahd of Saudi Arabia, with the Emir of Kuwait, and they sent Saddam Hussein into Iran to detach the oil-producing province Khuzestan and to amputate it by way of strangling the Iranian revolution. These are the circumstances of the 7-8-year Iran-Iraq war, because the population resisted. And it's in that context that Mousavi begins, under the heading of the emergency of the war, the mass subjugation of the Iranian population, notably the working class. One further point about this. One of the immediate responses to the revolution in Iran, the oil workers having been the principal instrument for the downfall of the regime with their general strike, was that they set up what were called shuras, workers' councils, to create workers' control of essential industry, notably the oil industry. They were spreading across Iran, spontaneous worker occupation of factories, of plants, inspired by the oil workers in Iran. It is that Amir Hossein Mousavi was the principal instrument in dismantling. And it was done through massacre, through assassination, through mass imprisonment, through a terrible and total repression of the working class and of the organized trade union movement in Iran.
Ralph, an article by Smadr Perry that appeared in Ynet News, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Mousavi, asks the question, Iranian reformist may seem moderate, but his history is one of a radical sympathizer for the Ayatollah's regime. Can a leopard really change its spots? He notes, His presidential campaign focused on problems rooted within the Islamic Republic. He pledged to improve the status of women, fight unemployment, poverty, and the younger generation's disconcerting affection for drugs, and he vowed that change will come. His resume, however, depicts an extremist, a man who is not so different than Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Mousavi began his career as a member of the Islamic Resistance in Iran, which eventually toppled Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi in 1979. But when Khomeini took power, as we mentioned before, Mousavi became his foreign minister.
Just one caveat here. In all these sanitized versions of what occurred in the Iranian Revolution, the breaking of the regime of the Savak, the mass mobilizations, that was the work of the Fedayeen Khalq. That was the work of the students of Tehran. That was, above all, the work of the oil workers. It was the general strike of the oil workers that paralyzed the regime in Iran. And for all the mobilizing of the Islamic fundamentalists and of Khomeini and their orchestration of mass demonstrations without any question, the crisis of the moment was the failure of the revolutionary organizations and the socialist movement to assert its own program. And that's the responsibility of the Tuda and the Communist Party. It's the responsibility of the Maoist organizations who subordinated themselves to Khomeini, who did not advance a contrary program to the mullahs, who allowed the mullahs to occupy the space of ideological prognostication about the future of the struggle on Iran. And that crisis remains the crisis today. There is an old saying, the technique of infamy is to invent two lies and get people arguing heatedly over which one of them is true. And that applies in particular to the debate which is occupying many, not only on the left, but within the mass media themselves, about the role of imperialism in destabilizing Iran, a long continuation of the attempts to reinstate full CIA control on behalf of the of U.S. Imperium and, of course, the Zionist state itself with its intention to dismantle Iran, to dismantle, along with its imperial masters, all of the states of the region, of the Arab East and of Central Asia into their ethnic and religious components. Here is Paul Craig Roberts articulating this, as have many. Iran falls to U.S. psyops, he writes on June 22nd. President Obama called on the Iranian government to allow protesters to control the streets of Tehran. Would Obama or any U.S. president allow protesters to control the streets in Washington? On May 16, 2007, the London Telegraph reported that Bush regime official John Bolton told the Telegraph that a U.S. military attack on Iran would be the last option after economic sanctions and the attempts to foment a popular revolution had failed, unquote. Craig Roberts continues, former Reagan official, "We are now witnessing in Tehran U.S., quote, attempts to foment a popular revolution in the guise of another CIA orchestrated color revolution. It is possible that splits amongst the mullahs themselves, brought about by their rival ambitions, will aid and abet what the Telegraph reported on May 27th, 2007 were, quote, CIA plans for a propaganda and disinformation campaign to destabilize and topple the theocratic rule of the mullahs. It is certainly a fact that the secularized youth of Tehran," writes Roberts, "have played into the CIA's hands." And this is a long and detailed piece in which he documents the destabilization undertakings, the covert operations in Iran that the Central Intelligence Agency and every administration has organized. As Mousavi was seen as Rafsanjani's man, he writes, "Why is it unbelievable that Ahmadinejad defeated Mousavi by the same margin he defeated Rafsanjani in the previous election? Neoconservative Kenneth Timmerman, let the cat out of the bag," writes Roberts, "that this is an orchestrated color revolution in the works. Before this election, Timmerman wrote, quote, there is talk of a green revolution in Tehran. Why would protests be organized prior to a vote and announcement of the outcome? Organized protests waiting in the wings are not spontaneous responses to a stolen election. He writes, Timmerman's organization, the Foundation for Democracy, is funded by the National Endowment for Democracy for the explicit purpose of promoting democracy in Iran. According to Timmerman, NED money has been funneled to the pro-Mosavi groups who have ties to non-governmental organizations outside of Iran, such as the National Endowment for Democracy Funds, unquote, and he writes, the U.S. media has studiously ignored these highly suggestive facts. They are not reporting or providing objective analysis. They are engaged in a propagandist onslaught against the Iranian government. It's a long article, but the theme is picked up not only, Maya, by Paul Craig Roberts, but a variety of analysts. And indeed, here is an important and instructive piece called Israeli Efforts to Destabilize Iran via Twitter. Proof, Israeli Efforts to Destabilize Iran by Peter Myers. Right-wing Israeli interests are engaged in an all-out Twitter attack with hopes of delegitimizing the Iranian election and causing political instability within Iran. Anyone using Twitter over the past few days knows that the topic of the Iranian election has been the most popular. Thousands of tweets and retweets alleging that the election was a fraud, calling for protests in Iran, and even urging followers to hack various Iranian news websites, which they did successfully. The Twitter popularity caught the eye of various blogs and made its way into mainstream news media sites. The BBC was caught in mass deception with Iran propaganda. And he writes, were these legitimate Iranians or the works of a propaganda machine? I decided to investigate the origins of the information. I narrowed it down to a handful of people who accounted for 30,000 Iran-related tweets in a few days. Each had striking similarities. They each created their Twitter accounts on Saturday, June 13th. Each had extremely high number of tweets since creating their profiles. Iran election was the most popular keyword. With some small exceptions, each were posted in English. Half of them had the exact same profile photo. Thousands of followers with only a few friends. Most of their friends were each other. Why were these tweets in English? Why were all those profiles obsessed with Iran? It became obvious that this was the work of a team of people with an interest in destabilizing Iran. And he documents the following. Iran rigged elect. 3,146. 340 tweets in 4 days. Top five words. Iran election, CNN fail, Mousavi, Tehran. All tweets in English. The bulk between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And he continues with a documentation of the manipulated, as he calls it, Israeli-sponsored tweets and Twitter that have, from his perspective, informed the understanding of the events in Iran, and by his reading, are accountable for the mass mobilization that unfolded. There are other such descriptions of the manipulations. What if Twitter is leading us all astray in Iran? An article by Joshua Cassera, which addresses the same issues.
Ralph, my problem with all these articles is that they deny the feelings and the sentiment of the Iranian people. It's as if they're not actors in their own right, that they don't have a role in history, a role in the organization of their daily lives, as if they are not going to react to injustice that has been accumulating year after year. This is what bothers me in terms of all these articles.
Well, Maya, I think there are two realities here. And one is that without any question, the Central Intelligence Agency, with its plans to destabilize Iran, they've been staging terrorist attacks and armed attacks and assassinations in Iran now for a substantial period of time. And the manipulation through media and the manipulation through control of communications is a stock in trade, which is not to say for one second that the mass mobilizations do not flow inexorably from the realities on the ground in Iran. And we will come to that in a moment.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Emerging Mass Opposition and Imperial Designs in Iran, The Unfinished Revolution. Ralph, an article in the World Socialist website refers to manipulation in the Western press. June 19th, the New York Times and Iran journalism as state provocation. And it begins. In an editorial published Thursday entitled Iran's Non-Republic, the New York Times once again denounced the country's presidential elections, declaring that government authorities bulldozed the results, and the victory of the incumbent Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was bogus. At the same time, echoing a statement made by President Barack Obama the day before, the newspaper warned, quote, given its history with Iran, the United States must take special care not to be seen as interfering, end quote. And in other comments, the word was meddling. The Times editorial board does not believe that this stricture applies to itself. Since the results of the June 12th election were announced, the newspaper has pursued a journalistic policy of out-and-out provocation in service of the imperialist interests that official Washington insists it must not be seen as pursuing. The Times observes no standard of journalistic objectivity, reporting as fact that the Iranian election was stolen without providing a scintilla of proof to back it up. Instead, it uncritically repeats the insistence of the Mousavi camp that it is so. On the contrary, they show that Mousavi won, in some cases by a 2-to-1 margin, precisely in the areas that are now the center of the election protests, the wealthier suburbs of Tehran, Shiraz, and elsewhere, and in keeping with the election results. It was reported, after an investigation by Iran's Guardian Council, and we have to say we doubt this is a true investigation, but the Iran's Guardian Council came out and said that 1/7 of the 350 districts that it had studied, that 50 of them had shown some irregularities in the polls, finding that the number of votes in the 50 districts exceeded the number of voters. And all this while riot police attacked all the protesters in the capital. This was reported in the Associated Press and in the Wall Street Journal on June 22nd and in the New York Times on the front page of today's newspaper, Tuesday the 23rd, Iran announces election errors amid crackdown. But despite these errors, and it comes to 3 million votes, the Guardian Council says that it is quite clear that no matter what these irregularities, the current president was the victor. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the World Socialist website, along with people such as James Petras and Michelle Chosadovsky, I mentioned Paul Craig Roberts, there's a substantial sector of left reporting which addresses the manipulation of the population in Iran, and in particular the newspaper reporting about the presumptively stolen election. Here is the World Socialist website, the New York Times in Iran, journalism as state provocation. And it cites the editorial, as you've mentioned, of Iran's non-republic, and it has the particular ways in which the evidence is manipulated by the New York Times as an engine of U.S. propaganda itself. A follow-up piece, it's called The Nation's Man in Tehran, who is Robert Dreyfus. Robert Dreyfus, the nation's principal correspondent in Iranian events on politics and national security, has parroted, the World Socialist website writes, the unverified charge of a stolen election and characterized the incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and his supporters as, quote, a virtual fascist movement. In a June 17th column entitled Battle Lines in Iran, Dreyfus, who has just returned from covering the election in Iran, speculated on the trajectory of the Iranian showdown. He wrote, quote, 30 years ago, it was the decision of the Shah of Iran not to confront the revolutionaries with violence that allowed the anti-Shah movement to grow strong enough to oust the Shah. Then, as now, a relatively small number of deaths, quote, martyrs, unquote, triggered a traditional Shiite 40-day cycle of memorial marches and ceremonial protests and led to a crescendo of protests by the end of 1978, unquote. The World Socialist website and Bill Van Auken continue. This is an astonishing statement. While the number killed by the Shah's troops in the notorious Savak is disputed, the government puts that at 60,000, while there is no question that virtually every one of the demonstrations in 1978 saw hundreds if not thousands of workers and students mowed down by automatic weapons fire in cities across the country. The Savak, trained by the CIA, the one of the most sadistic secret police forces in the world, known for its systematic and hideous torture of anyone suspected of being an opponent of the monarchical regime, its victims numbered in the tens of thousands. And it asks, how is one to account for this whitewashing of a brutal dictatorship by a journalist now posing as a champion of democracy? It's a long article, but let me synthesize it as follows. First of all, let us answer the question posed by the World Socialist website. Robert Dreyfus, for many years, had been associated with Lyndon LaRouche and has himself an intelligence agency background. This is a figure who wrote in complete support of the Shah of Iran and who attributed the resistance to the Shah propaganda and whitewashed, as I mentioned, all of the repression of the regime of its day. That he is the principal national security correspondent and international correspondent of the Nation should not come as a surprise, since the Nation has on its editorial board a figure named Max Holland, who writes officially for the Central Intelligence Agency website and who is the proponent of the thesis in his conjunction with Philip Zelikow that the evidence about the attempts on the part of the CIA to create a putsch in Italy, which are linked, by the way, to the work of Clay Shaw in Italy, were communist propaganda. I won't go into the particularity of that, since I'm the person who was working with Paesi Serra at the time and provided the data from Mark Lane and others about the role of the CIA in the assassination of Kennedy and its links to these events in Italy. That along, we've done that programming before, but the Nation and Robert Dreyfus, along with many of those who are orchestrating this particular mobilization of sentiment around the demonization of the current regime in Iran, flow from intelligence apparatus, without question. But
Ralph, that is not to say that this is not. This is an oppressive regime, oppressive in terms of human and civil rights, oppressive in terms of the economic, the social, the civil, the human, the rights of all the people of Iran. It is meant to suppress the people of Iran. I think we need to address the article by James Petras, Iranian Elections, the Stolen Elections Hoax, the falseness of this article, because it is making its way throughout the internet, and many people keep sending it to us, particularly in Petras, his main thesis that that this was a battle between upper-class technocrats supported by Western-oriented privileged youth who prize individual lifestyles over community values and solidarity, referring to supporters of Mousavi. And the demography of voting reveals a real class polarization pitting high-income, free-market-oriented, capitalist individualists against working-class, low-income, community-based supporters of a moral economy in which usury and profiteering are limited by religious precepts. What a load of bunk. Now, if you're going to read the Petras article, please read also the article by Chava Eshani, who's an assistant professor of international studies at DePaul University of Chicago and on the editorial board of the Middle East Report, MEREP. And his article is in response particularly to the James Petras appalling article he refers to, the Petras article, about the stolen election hoax, in quotes, in Iran. And he goes point by point about the election process. He's been working in Iran for a long time. He goes through the issues of the election process. And in particular, he notes that election observers in Iran have to be present when ballots are counted and sealed, and they sign the result sheet and are given a copy. And this is the law. It's been followed before, but it was not followed in this election.
Maya, what Petras is articulating here is the thesis that the Ahmadinejad government is a government that is rooted in the working class, in the rural and the urban poor, that it is anti-imperialist and has as such been targeted. And that the propaganda, as he calls it, regarding the stolen election and the absence of support for Ahmadinejad is what he calls the work of the Zionist mass media. The American Zionists embedded in the Obama regime, who follow Israel's lead in pushing for preemptive war in Iran and use the specious argument that no negotiations are possible with an illegitimate government in Tehran with stolen election. And this continues Petras has been an anti-imperialist, and notably with his work regarding Latin America. But a feature of Petras's writings and of his political approach to the realities of imperialism has been to embrace any regime, any national regime that is targeted by imperialism, and to reinvent it. And in particular, I want to emphasize that what James Petras has recently been about is making the claim that American politics and the American ruling class is under the complete control of the Zionist regime in Israel. In fact, he has taken this position to the point where he uses virtually the language of David Dukes. He talks about Zog, Zionist occupied government. He talks about the Ziocons. He uses these language, and here's the problem with this. And we are of course for nearly 30 years are writing and documenting the nature of the Zionist state, its predatory character, its genocidal response to the masses of the Palestinian people. But the reinvention of the Zionist state as the controlling factor in American life, of American political life, the underlying premise of this is that there's a good bourgeoisie. There is a patriotic national bourgeoisie, as Petras himself has written, which but for Zionist control and Zionist manipulation and the role of the APEC and the Zionist lobby would pursue American national interests. And here he revisits this notion when he says neoconservatives, libertarian conservatives, and the Trotskyists have joined the Zionists, inhaling the opposition protesters as the advance guard of a democratic revolution. By the way, brothers and sisters, the term Trotskyite is a term of, it's a slur. Quite bluntly, it is roughly the equivalent of nigger versus negro in the lexicon of the revolutionary movement and among socialists. It has its genesis in the Stalin purge trials, in which the opposition to the Stalin dictatorship by Bolsheviks and by the left opposition was demonized as the work of the Mikado and of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and of the imperialists, and they were called Trotskyites. Those who use that term know exactly its genesis and its history. And that is no less true of Mr. Petras. This is a rather ironic facet of this left attempt to romanticize the Ahmadinejad theocratic state and to demonize the opposition by reference to the undoubted and constant attempts on the part of imperialism to destabilize and to fragment Iran, to establish its hegemony and to reverse the revolution. That is a constant, but you cannot equate the constant destabilization efforts of imperialism to the popular reaction to a brutal theocratic regime. And let it not be misunderstood. Ahmadinejad's regime is supportive of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, has been behind-the-scenes collusive with the U.S. Designs in Iraq, has constantly signaled to the United States that it is willing to be its instrument in the region. It merely wants the U.S. to grant the Iranian regime its own hegemony over its own territory, which, of course, is something imperialism will never do. But the attempt is still constantly there.
Ralph, can I make a comment here about Mousavi's campaign? Because much is made in articles about Mousavi being for the free market. And this is based upon generalized comments that he's made, none of which are free market, except that he talks about having some foreign investment in Iran. But his chief economic strategist, Farshad Momeni, has come out and said that Mousavi will continue Ahmadinejad's economic policies, that is, state control of particularly the oil sector. And this is important to understand. The other thing is that with Ahmadinejad distributing food and having subsidies, this was to prevent the descent of the rural population over the past years and to prevent the descent of the workers. It is not for the benefit of these people.
That goes without saying. And by the way, one important point about the Ahmadinejad economic program, they're very much tied into the Putin regime in Russia. And one of the natures of this particular alliance is that Putin has been instrumental in promoting a program that Ahmadinejad and his supporters are adopting, namely to take the oil sector and to make it the province of the oligarchy, much as was done by essentially the oligarchs who took off their KGB and party bureaucratic hats and became the masters of the entire economy of Russia in a privatized form. That privatized form will be the strict domain of the oligarchy in Tehran. That's their projection.
Ralph,
please, one point that I really must make here with respect to Petras, just to finish that. Petras talks about the Trotskyites and the neocons as the progenitors of the assessment of the Ahmadinejad regime. Let me read the statement of the Central Committee of the Tudeh Party, the Communist Party of Iran, on June 13, 2009. Our vigilant compatriots, your great participation in tens of millions has again turned the 10th presidential election into a referendum against this backward-looking and deceitful regime. Millions of Iranians stood in long queues holding green flags as a sign of protest against the bankrupt, despotic rule of the spiritual leader and his cronies. This has shaken the mendacious regime to such an extent that its leaders, fearful of the repetition of a second Khordad, Khatami's election in 1997, have ordered their repressive forces into the major cities to crush the will of the majority by organizing a quasi-military coup. The attacks by the security forces of Ahmadinejad against thousands of young people pouring into the streets protesting against the regime's charade, along with the forced closure of Mousavi's campaign headquarters, combined with the threats issued by the Revolutionary Guards to suppress all protest, are indicators of a heavy defeat suffered by the regime's leadership on the 12th of June. Both presidential candidates, Mousavi and Karoubi, have declared the poll results as null and void, stating they will not leave the stage. This obvious poll rigging, the fixing of millions of ballots in Ahmadinejad's name, followed by Khamenei's confirmation of the election results, shows that the spiritual leader and his armed militias are the organizers of state-sponsored violence against the will of millions of Iranians. This electoral charade points to a turning point in the way the regime will deal with its opponents, and it demonstrates that even the so-called insider critics will not be allowed the most limited political activity. In recent weeks, the Tudeh Party of Iran has repeatedly warned against the sinister plans of the repressive forces preparing to crush the people's will. We ask all national forces, all those struggling for liberty, to unite in a common cause in opposing this regime's plans. We must not let the powerful might of the people, which has enraged and petrified the reactionaries, to be eroded, and must prevent people's retreat into disillusionment, giving the arena back to these reactionary forces. It's a long statement. You got the picture? That's the Communist Party of Iran. Trotskyites? Here is the Communist Party of France through Humanité. The victory by Ahmadinejad is acclaimed by his supporters. 19th of June. Ahmadinejad's re-election provokes violent demonstrations in the street of Tehran and in other cities across the land. The outgoing president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, was re-elected on Friday with more than 60% of the votes cast, if you trust figures issued by the Ministry of the Interior. The unhappy losing candidates asked that the ballot be annulled for irregularities, and the article continues. Irregularities or not, what has happened in Iran is more a question of politics than of economic orientation. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad knew how to keep his support among poor fringes of the Iranian populace, both rural and urban, while the representatives of certain bourgeois sectors that had not been corrupted were still linked to that which was not healthy, wanted to play for modernity. They were simply seen as Western. They don't know how to hide the demonstrations that are taking place. But these are not only in Tehran. They are in cities such as Shiraz, Tabriz, Mashhad. In the neighborhoods of Tehran, Tadrish, the demonstrators took control of the police headquarters. We have to continue the movement of contestation. Mousavi and Karoubi have had the courage to refuse this result. We have to reorganize this movement in Iran. No one is safe in leading this movement. Anyone who moves is arrested. And then the humanity continues, Maya, when the regime of the mullahs begins to crack. There are five major articles by Pierre Bourbonnais in Humanité and by the Communist Party of France delineating the corrupt and brutal nature of this regime. Are they oblivious to imperial manipulation? Are they indifferent to the role of the Central Intelligence Agency? I think not. But they understand, as they quote Mohsen Mahmabaf, even violence will not keep us from continuing. You can be sure that even violence will not stop us. And he says, when Mousavi's preparing his victory speech, the generals of the Revolutionary Guards, the regime's powerful Praetorian Guard, arrived in his office carrying a letter from the Supreme Council explaining that they could not accept the victory of Mousavi. Mousavi was informed that he had won the election, but he was ordered to keep a low profile, and he refused to accept this order. Now, we will have to continue, Maya, with this delineation, but come to the point. You have in Iran a mobilized population using a blunt instrument to oppose a brutal and repressive regime. And imperialism wants to destabilize the country without question. But we support the masses of the population in their efforts to transform Iran. And that's where everyone who's concerned with the liberation of the oppressed has to be in this question of the struggle in Iran for the continuation and the completion of the Iranian revolution.
I would like to make one point before we end. And that is, prior to the election, Ahmadinejad went throughout Iran, town by town, city by city. And there was the distribution of billions of tomans worth of economic assistance and food distribution among villagers very close to the elections. He was buying their votes. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Emerging Mass Opposition and Imperial Designs in Iran, The Unfinished Revolution, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us. We would like to hear from you at takingaim@pacbell, that's P-A-C-B-E-L-L .net. We'll be with you next week. Keep picking up in the eye. That's a fact, that's a road, that's